Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at HollywoodBlends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is an iconic television talk show host, producer, and author from New York City, whose immensely successful award-winning interview program, Profiles, is currently ranked at number 8 on the Hollywood 411 list of the top 50 talk shows in the world. After a successful broadcasting career with a number of television networks, he created his unique interview program, Profiles, in 1999, and has interviewed well over 500 prominent celebrities, including Christopher Plummer, Robert Wagner, Carol Channing, Smokey Robinson, Joan Collins, Dick Cavett, Joan Rivers, Isaac Hayes, and believe me, I'm just scratching the surface. His TV show, which airs on the NYC Media Network in New York, has won 7 Telly Awards, and those awards are so well-deserved because this man is renowned for his research, insightful questions, compassion, and sincerity. Our guest was honored with the Outstanding Alumni Award from his alma mater, Missouri Valley College, which also bestowed an honorary doctorate upon him in 2012. He's also written 2 books, a fascinating memoir entitled From the Projects to Profiles, and a beautiful coffee table book entitled Inside Celebrity Profiles, A Visual Journey, which is filled with photos, quotes, and fun facts from the set of his show, featuring some of his most illustrious guests. I'm delighted to welcome the New York icon himself, Mickey Burns. Mickey, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure, Harvey. I didn't know we were rated number 8 on the list of talk shows worldwide. That's information I didn't have. You really did your research.
Well, I'm very honored to have you on the show. Our show is number 12, so I'm behind you, but I've always looked up to you, so I'm very happy to be anywhere near you on that list, believe me.
Well, it was also a pleasure having you on our show a month ago. You were a great guest and you have a fascinating background. So thank you for joining us on Profiles.
Oh, it was a great pleasure. You know, it's rare that I get the chance to interview another interviewer and particularly someone whom I've admired for so long. So this is going to be fun. And I also want to thank you not only for having me on your show, but for making me feel so welcome, Mickey. It was a real joy.
Right. Well, you're doing pretty good. I mean, I see some of the guests that you've had, very impressive. I mean, I've been doing this for 21 years. We're banging on 700 episodes, but you're going to catch up rather quickly, I think.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Prior to launching your show, Profiles, in 1999, you were on television in a number of different capacities. What made you decide to focus on becoming an interviewer of celebrities?
Well, I started out working at Fox, and I started out behind the camera. I started out actually at Fox as a sound man. And I always wanted to be an interviewer, but when I graduated college, it was BC. You know what that stands for, right?
Before cable. Before.
So there wasn't a lot of opportunity back then. So I was a teacher for a period of time, a coach, an athletic coach. And then I started working at Fox. And Rupert Murdoch took over, I guess, in the late 80s. And the first thing he did was cut out all the overtime. So we got a band of, you know, production people, and we moonlighted on the side because they had to make up the money they weren't making in overtime. And they said, well, Mickey, here's your opportunity. Now you're going to be in front of the camera. They got a contract with Time Warner, and we were producing a news magazine called Special Edition. And I finally got an opportunity to do what I always wanted, and that was to be a host or an interviewer. So thank you, Rupert Murdoch.
Yes, thank you, Rupert Murdoch. The entire New York community thanks you. Do you have a particular philosophy as to what constitutes a good interview?
I think foremost, research. And I think we talked about this during your interview. I never go into an interview. I was doing a live show years ago, and it was called Staten Island Live. And it was like Larry King Live. And I was interviewing all the newsmakers of the day in the metropolitan New York area. And one day I had a detective on the show who was starting a recreational program for kids. And I had his live television. I had 15 minutes with him. And after five, and every answer he gave me was yes, no, very brief. And now I had 10 minutes on live television. I was out of questions. That's dying. I was dying. Somehow we got through, but I said, you know, I'm never, ever, ever going to go into an interview again without having more research than I need. And I'll tell you, over the years, we've done 700 episodes. I can't tell you how many of our celebrities have stopped the interview and said to me, Mickey, you really did your research. I appreciate that.
I've seen that myself.
Research is the most, and I think the second thing is not to be affected, you know, not trying to be an interviewer, not trying to be a TV host, but trying to be very relaxed, like I'm talking to the celebrity in my living room. And I think that relaxes them, and it relaxes the host as well. So I think those two things are very, very important.
And that's interesting because that's exactly what you're known for, your research, your excellent questions, and also putting your guest at ease, making the guest feel that they are in a comfortable space. I can say that having had the experience. Now, when you're interviewing a big star, Mickey, are there areas of questioning, for example, their personal lives that you will not go into?
It depends on how important those questions are within the context. I mean, you interviewed Robert Wagner. I interviewed Robert Wagner. And we had to talk about Natalie Wood. How could you do an interview without getting into that personal zone? But he talked about it. You know, I think the key is when you're talking about sensitive topics, you have to know where in the interview to inject them. If you do it too soon, it could create an uneasy atmosphere. So I think a skill set is to know when to ask the sensitive questions so that you make the interview work overall. And if you build trust during the beginning of the interview, they're more likely to discuss the sensitive topics as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Who are the interviewers that you've looked up to in your life?
Well, I love Dick Cavett. I thought he was the best. I liked Bob Costas. And I like Larry King. I think he was underrated. Larry King got the most out of his guests, but he did it very nonchalantly. That was a skill set that he had. And and Dick Cavett brought intelligence to the interview format. So, and Bob Costas also well informed. So those three, I think, would be my top three interviewers.
If I'm not mistaken, you interviewed Dick Cavett, didn't you?
That was a big thrill. That was a big joy. It's like, you know, you're interviewing your hero. And he was fantastic. You know, I went into the interview, you have the feeling I'm not worthy. You know, because he was the king of talk, really, and the best at it. He was very kind, and he allowed me to get through the interview and create a compelling episode.
That's just amazing. What a terrific opportunity to interview one of your own role models.
It was great.
Now, one of the things I really admire about you as an interviewer, Mickey, is that you make your interviews all about the guest, not about you. In my opinion, too many interviewers these days focus far too much on themselves instead of on their guest. Do you agree with that?
100%. And in my book, I write, there's a chapter on giving tips for potential interviewers and how to make a career out of it. And that's one of the things I write about in the book. You know, it's if you're interviewing Joe Namath, nobody, you know, I've seen an interview where the interviewer says, "Oh, I ran into you in the bathroom at Giant Stadium in 1955 or whatever." Nobody cares. They want to learn and know everything about Joe Namath. And your job as an interviewer is to get all that information out of him. And I sometimes see myself as a pitcher who's doing batting practice. So I'm just grooving the pitches into the batter so he looks his best. And I think as an interviewer, I try to do the same thing. Nothing is about me. It's all about the guest and bringing out the best in them and getting the most out of them.
Amen to that. Now, you know, Mickey, when you and I were growing up, there were a lot of really great one-on-one interviewers besides Dick Cavett, like David Frost, James Lipton, Barbara Walters, and others. They were what I call old school interviewers who dug deep and tried to give us a real sense of who the person was beneath the celebrity image. But nowadays, you have all these two-minute soundbite interviews on Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood. They're just a lot of fluff, in my opinion. Do you think that interviewers like you and I are a dying breed?
Well, we're trying to bring it back, Harvey, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're trying to bring it back. I mean, one of the reasons that we started to produce profiles was for that exact reason. There aren't a lot of shows now that have in-depth interviews on television. And I was doing another show called Special Edition. It was a news magazine. And in every show, we had a 4 minute celebrity profile segment. And I went up to Sardi's to interview Danny Aiello. And I said, Danny, he had a caricature done of him, and they were presenting it to him. And he said, "Sure, Mickey, no problem." So after the festivities were over, we sat down. And I'm looking for a 4 minute, 5 minute segment with him. We started talking, and 45 minutes later, I knew his life story. So I went back to the studio and I said, "I have a 45 minute compelling interview with Danny Aiello, and we can only use 4 minutes. That's criminal. We should consider doing another show, call it Profiles, and have these celebrities have an opportunity to share their stories in depth." And that was the beginning of Profiles.
That's very significant, that story that you just told, because first of all, it demonstrates that the celebrity whose time is valuable and who's not really interested in wasting his own time picked up on your skills and realized that this was a good use of his time. And number two, I'm very impressed that the network was willing to then create a show called Profiles, which would allow you to do these in-depth interviews. I wonder, are you a fan of the late night talk show hosts?
Oh, yeah, I watch them all. But they're not in-depth interviews. Again, they're 5 minute, you know, talk about the latest movie, the latest project, how's your family? And then they move on to the entertainment part of the show, right? So it's not in depth, but I like Jimmy Kimmel. I like him a lot. I think he does a great job. He's my favorite late night guy.
Yeah, I like him too. I like Jimmy Fallon.
Natural. You know, he's not affected at all. And that's a skill set.
Most celebrity interviewers are in Hollywood. Did you ever consider moving there?
I never did. I'm a New York City born and bred. And I was just thrilled to get back to New York and be able to do what I do here. Most journalists have to travel many other cities to work their way back to New York. So I was honored that I didn't have to do that. And I was able to create my career in the Big Apple. And I never had an interest to go to LA.
You've had so many legendary stars on your show. Do you ever get starstruck?
That's a great question, Harvey, because I don't think I have, you know, because I've always looked at them as people, not necessarily celebrities. And I wanted to know what makes them tick, what the keys to their success have been. But I've never been starstruck. That's strange. I never thought about it. But now that you bring it up, no, I never have. Have you?
Yes, at the beginning. Well, you can imagine I was a judge, and I certainly did not deal with celebrities in my career. And when I started my show, it was a hobby. I just wanted to see if I could get anybody famous to talk to me, because I always wanted to be an interviewer, never thinking that I would ever escalate to the point where we would be getting these legendary stars. And I did have to teach myself not to be starstruck.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you're doing okay with it.
You're a sweetie. Tell me, have you made a little list in your memory of some of your favorite guests on your show?
Well, you know, that's a question I'm asked all the time. Who are your favorite guest, right? But I've done 700 episodes. And I would say in every one of those episodes, including yours, there's a nugget that stays with you and is interesting and make the interview great. But I can go down a couple. I mean, one of my favorites was Eli Wallach. Good, Bad, and the Ugly, many Broadway shows. I interviewed him at 96 years old. He was still sharp as a tack. So I want to tell you a quick story. After the interview, he said, Mickey, do me a favor. Let's take a walk up Broadway. So it was a beautiful June afternoon. Here I am walking up Broadway with Eli Wallach, one of the perks of the job, right? And as we're walking up this Broadway, he's got a bag in his hand, you know, like a plastic bag from the supermarket. And I said, Mr. Wallach, what do you have in the bag? And he said, shoes. That's where we're going. We're walking up to the cobbler. I'm going to get my shoes fixed. And I thought I would be funny. I wasn't, but I tried. And I said, Mr. Wallach, I didn't call him Eli. Mr. Wallach, why don't you just go to Macy's and buy 10 new pair? And he grabbed me by my wrist and stopped me in mid-stride, looked me straight in the eye, and he said, Mickey, I got to tell you, I grew up during the Depression. And he said, back then, we didn't buy new, we fixed old. And I've never been able to shake that. And I'm saying, oh, my God, I'm getting a life lesson from Eli Wallach besides a phenomenal interview. I'll never forget that day.
You see, one of the perks of being the way you are, having your personality, is that your guests become your friends. I love that about you.
That happens a lot, and I love that, and I respect that, and I cherish that.
Have you ever been surprised by a guest?
I think many, you know, especially when they do something or say something that you don't expect. You know, I remember Sally Kellerman from MASH, and then she was Rodney Dangerfield's love interest and Back to School. Right? So we're in the middle of her career interview, and then she stops me in the middle. And she said, Mickey, I got to tell you about Harrison Ford. And I'm saying, what is she going to tell? She's taking the interview away from me in the middle, you know? And she said, before he was a star, he was a carpenter. So I hired him to build me a day bed. And she said, you know something? The day bed came out a foot too short. And then she said, it's a good thing he made it as an actor. He was a lousy carpenter. And now I'm saying, where did this come from? You know? And then another time I had Chuck Barris on the show. Remember him from the Gong Show?
Yes.
And in the middle of the interview, he stopped me. And he said, Mickey, I got to tell you, you have a book in you. You should be writing a book. And I said, Mr. Barrett, I don't have the time. You know, that takes a lot of time. He said, no, I'll give you a tip. Do what I do. He said, write one page a day. And at the end of the year, you have your book. So he was the inspiration for me writing my memoir.
You know what I think that means when those things happen during an interview? I think the guest is momentarily forgetting that they're being interviewed. They're so in the moment. They're so in a conversation with you that you've made them actually forget. This is the show.
Right. And I have one other story. Same thing happened. Smokey Robinson. Right. Weeks before, just like with you, you send emails. What time is the interview? When it's going to happen? What to do? So the week before the interview, I got several emails from his manager saying, you have 25 minutes, not a minute more. He's busy. We have other interviews. So the day of the interview comes, and I had read somewhere that he's an avid golfer like I am. That's my hobby. And he was struggling with his putting. So guys in the crew, we chipped in. We bought him a new putter. Right? So now, before we start the interview, I said, Smokey, I heard you were struggling with your putter. Here's a new putter. The crew got together and bought you. He was so touched by this gesture. He said, I've been in the business 50 years. You're lucky if you get a cup of coffee. And here we're giving him this putter. So now, fast forward, we're at around 23 minutes into the interview. And out of the corner of my eye, I see the manager in the back of the set going like this to me. Speed it up. You got 2 minutes, like this. Smokey sees him. And he said, Tony, sit down. I'm talking to my brother Mickey, and I'll tell you when we're done. Right?
Bravo.
Right? So we end up doing another 30 minutes. We did a two-parter. And one of them was the Emmy Award-winning show.
That is such a tribute to you once again. I have had that same experience, and I consider it such a thrill when the guest says, I don't care if we're running behind. I want to keep going.
Right, right. And I know Tony wasn't happy with it, but we must have interviewed him for an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. He wanted to talk.
You know, the first time we had Tony Orlando on the show, he broke down and cried. And I was so completely taken aback and so unprepared for that, that I didn't really know what to do or say. And to this day, I wonder if I could have handled it better. And so I'm wondering, has that ever happened to you?
Well, yeah, I've had a guest cry on the set. You know, you're touching a chord, you're touching something that is emotional for them. And I always say to them when they start crying, are you trying to win me another Emmy? Keep crying, you know, that makes for a compelling episode. People can't get enough of that.
And it's so genuine. I want to throw some names at you, Mickey, of people you've had on the show and get your reaction. Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
So let me start with one of my all-time favorites. She's appeared twice on your show. She told you that you are a fabulous interviewer, Miss Joan Rivers.
Yeah, can you imagine Joan Rivers telling me, you're a fabulous interviewer? I was flying high after that compliment. Joan was brilliant, giving, funny. I've had her on the show twice, and I think her intelligence was underrated. She graduated number one in her class out of college, and I think her major, Harvey, you'd appreciate this, was anthropology. Interesting, right? And I said, were you considering creating a career in anthropology? And she said, I was until they told me I couldn't bring my makeup alone. So, yeah, I love her. I mean, she's one of my favorites of all time. Died way too young. Shouldn't have happened.
Oh, that's for sure. That was a tragedy. How about Ernest Borgnine?
Another one of my favorite. And interestingly, he was married to... Who was
Ethel Merman.
Merman. And he told the story about why they broke up. They lasted 30 days. They were in Hawaii on their honeymoon. Somebody had given him a moon rock. And he was showing it to people. And he was very popular from at that time because he had McHale's Navy. But she became very jealous that he was getting all the attention and nobody knew her. And she threw such a tizzy fit that when they got back to the hotel, he said, this is not going to work. And of course, in her memoir, she's got a chapter about her marriage to Ernest Borgnine, which is three blank pages.
Yeah.
Loved Ernest Borgnine. Down to earth, giving again, and, you know, didn't carry himself like the star that he was. He's a regular guy.
How about Carol Channing?
Carol Channing was so sweet. I can't tell you how sweet she was. And she also stopped the interview in the middle. And she said, Mickey, I got to stop this interview. I've never done an interview where the interviewer was more prepared than you. And then she went on. She said, I did a show last night with a young interviewer, reporter on a TV station. And you know how they started the interview? And I said, no, Carol, tell us. Well, they started by saying, so Carol, tell us what it is you do.
Oh.
The reporter didn't even know she had done 5,000 performances of Hello, Dolly, right? But she was, and it was interesting, Harvey, because she came to the interview with her junior high school sweetheart. And they reunited after like 60 years. And they got married.
What a lovely person she was. What about Joan Collins? What was it like to interview her?
Well, there was a diva, right? And I had found something about her in doing my research. Classy, beautiful, even though she was getting up there in years, she was still stunningly beautiful. I remember that. And I remember at one point, she couldn't find work. It was before Dallas. And she had to go to the unemployment office and get unemployment. And she said, how did you find out about that? And it was in an old article. But the problem is she went to the unemployment office in a gown she was going to wear to the Oscars because she had a photo shoot afterwards. And she said, it didn't look too good that I needed unemployment with this, you know, $10,000 gown on. So she was great, beautiful.
Do you have any fun memories of interviewing Ed Asner?
Yeah, I do. You know, just that he was very serious, you know, and he was very concerned. He was ahead of the Actors Union, I think, at the time. But I was surprised. He was very serious, and it was, you know, question and answer, but no levity. I like to interject a little bit of levity. He was very serious. That's what I remember about him.
I think one of your most special interviews was with Maya Angelou.
Yeah, well, that was the one where I definitely said, I'm not worthy. And I knew I was way over my head, but she was kind and she allowed me to feel that I wasn't over my head. And I said to her, do you realize how people love you and love your work? And how talented you are? Do you realize your skills? And then she went on and gave me this whole comparison to, you know, talent is the same as electricity. You know, I said, oh, really? We really don't know what it is or how it works, but we utilize it to the best of our ability. And I said, there's another life lesson. What a thrill to sit down with her. At the time, she was America's greatest poet. Thrill, one of my favorite guests as well. Very giving as well.
Would you ever interview a politician?
I have. You know, my next guest is Bill Bradley, and he ran for president. You know, and I've done, I think I've had borough presidents. Yeah, I've done politicians in the past. Problem with that is the network that I work for is paid for by the city of New York. So you have to be very careful if you're interviewing an adversary of the person that's writing the checks for the network, and they say bad things about the person writing the checks. So we kind of shun away from politicians. Have you done politicians so far?
No, and I won't.
Why is that?
Well, I spent my entire career after becoming a lawyer as a judge, and I've just been trained to be apolitical. And honestly, I'm not interested. I much prefer the world of pop culture and show business, so I stay away from them.
Yeah. I mean, I try to stay away from it as well. I did an interview the other day for the first time out of the 700 episodes, kind of on a landmark as opposed to a person. And I went out to the TWA hotel, TWA terminal at Kennedy Airport, which is now a New York City landmark. And it was built in 1962 by Howard Hughes. It was fascinating. I interviewed the CEO who renovated it. And now it's a hotel, actually.
Now, for those people watching this interview who are not in the New York area, I know some of your interviews, Mickey, are on your YouTube channel, but not all of them. So have you ever considered setting up a website where people can pay to watch your interviews?
Well, you know, the reason that it is the way it is I have a syndication company that sells it around the world. They've sold it in Japan. They've sold it in the Bahamas. And they feel that if we put it up on YouTube, we're giving the episodes away, and it becomes harder for them to sell the series. So that's the reason we don't do it.
Well, that's why I asked you whether you've considered a website where people pay to see the interviews. And I suggest that because you've interviewed so many legendary stars who are no longer with us, and those interviews are important pieces of show business history, in my opinion.
I agree. It's something that I'm going to bring up at our next meeting and consider that.
Yeah, I totally understand why you don't want to give it away, but I think people would pay to see some of your interviews because there is no one else like you that interviews the way you do. I know that from personal experience. And those interviews are magic. Now, if you could interview three people, living or dead, who would you choose?
That's a great question. I haven't thought, you know, I always wanted to interview Raquel Welch. I met Tom Jones. I met him, talked to him, but I've never had him on the show. So Tom Jones would be the second. And Pete Rose, the baseball player, would be the third. I had him scheduled once and he canceled, but because I find him fascinating with his gambling background and being excluded from the Baseball Hall of Fame. So those are the three people that I would have on the top of my list. And so, I have a section in my book with the people that those people, by the way, that I didn't get, but I would love to have.
Spoken like a true straight man. Now, if you want to hear from a gay man, my three would be Princess Diana, Judy Garland, and Barbara Streisand.
You may get Barbara Streisand.
What's the most rewarding thing for you about being an interviewer?
That I walk away with nuggets in every interview, and I walk away with life lessons, and that I can build a compelling interview that people can sit in their living rooms and enjoy and appreciate. That's about it. It's so gratifying You know, I had Burt Young on the show from Rocky. You know Burt Young, the actor?
Yeah.
And to me after the interview, Mickey, you must feel great after you do such a good job. And man, you must be flying after the interviews. And I said, I feel pretty good. It makes my day.
Do you think that the celebrities we have today are as interesting to the public as the big legendary stars who were out there when we were growing up?
Yeah, probably not. You know, the legendary stars like Eli Wallach and Ernest Borgnine and Carol Channing have such a history. You know, they've had trials and tribulations for decades. Today, I think the celebrities are, I don't know, just feel like this is coming to them. You know, they're not as interesting. And I don't think they had to pay their dues the way the old time people did. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's a sense of entitlement among the younger generation.
Yeah, definitely. I did want to mention my next project. I'm going to do a one-man play. I'm working
really?
On.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's I was speaking at a workshop for screenwriters, and they wanted to know about the show, how it started, blah blah blah. You know, so I was telling them a lot of the stories I shared with you today, and at the end, there's like 40 screenwriters in the audience, and at the end, I said, "Does anybody have a question?" And simultaneously, 40 hands went up. I said, that was so great. I wish I had a photo of that, you know? So I said, they're interested in the history of the show. They're interested in many of the stories that come with it. And I said, I can do a one-man play and I would enjoy it. And I think the fans of the show would like it. Show some clips, tell some stories. It's a win-win.
I think that is a fabulous idea because you do have those clips to flesh out your stories.
Yes.
I also think you would be a great teacher to people who want to be interviewers because there's no place you can really learn. You just have to watch.
Yeah.
You've interviewed so many famous people. I'm wondering if you've learned anything over the years about what it's like to be famous.
I don't think it's that important. You know, I had Joe Piscopo on the show and we talked about that topic. And he said, because he's famous from Saturday Night Live and all that he's done. And I asked him that question. This is the one you asked me. And he said, in the end, nobody cares. He said, the only one that really cares about your fame are the people that love you and your family. So that's the way I feel about it.
When I had Rona Barrett on the show, I asked her this question, and I'm going to ask you as well. Have you been able to figure out why some celebrities have not been able to handle their success and being famous after working so hard to get there?
Yeah, I think money has a lot to do with it. You know, I mean, today celebrities are not like when Ernest Borgnine was doing McHale's Navy. Maybe he made $50,000 a year. Today, if you're a real star, you're making multi-million-dollar endorsements plus your salary. And I think a lot of them can't handle the financial aspect and they go crazy. You know, they get into drugs, they get, you know, women, it's women, it's sex. And I think the money is the root of the problem, in my opinion.
Do you have any thoughts on the current state of the industry compared to when you were starting out?
Yeah, you know, before cable, there were seven channels. Today, there's 500 channels. So you have to work extra hard to get your share of that audience, right? And I think about that all the time. And how do you do that? By being excellent. Simple as that. If you're mediocre, you're not going to get any share. If you're presenting a product that is different and unique, then you have a shot at getting a share of that audience and maintaining it. But it's harder than it used to be, And it's getting harder all the time because now you not only have the 500 channels, but you have podcasts and the internet and social media. So a lot of competition for the eyeballs.
Yeah, for sure. Although I think that you and I have just focused on being the best we can be, and we don't worry about the competition.
I agree with you 100%. You know, you'd asked me a question before, and I wanted to tell you the story about, do you ever get a story from your guest that surprises you? That was your question. And I had Lou Gramm on, the lead singer of Foreigner. And in his memoir, I didn't read that section. I missed it, where he said he was on death's door. And I said, well, what happened? And he said he was, you know, 20 something years ago, he was getting migraines. And he was having long and short term memory loss. And he's still performing to, you know, sold out arenas. And so he went and got an MRI, and his doctor in Rochester told him, you have a mass on your brain. And it had tentacles that was wrapped around your pituitary gland. So I'm going to send you into Manhattan to see a doctor, an expert there, specialist. And he did. And the doctor saw the MRI and said, go home and get your affairs together. You have about 2 months to live. So he went home. He was getting his affairs together. I didn't expect this, Harvey. You know, I was like, almost fell off my chair. He's getting his affairs together. And he's watching 60 Minutes. And there's a segment on a doctor from Boston who does brain surgery with laser. So he saw the doctor's name and got the information online, called up the next day, and they said, if you fly in tomorrow, the doctor can see you. He did. That was on a Tuesday. Wednesday morning, he was in surgery. He wakes up from surgery. He said to the doctor, boy, that was fast. You know, he said, yeah, that was 3 days ago. He was out for 3 days. To make the story, they were able to get all of it. That was 23 years ago. And he said, if I wasn't watching 60 Minutes, I would have been dead 23 years ago. Is that a great story or what?
Wow. And what did you say to him when he told you that story? Because you were so surprised.
I said, that doctor is your angel. He said, absolutely. Absolutely. I go back for checkup every year. I'm good.
I think he should make a commercial for 60 Minutes.
Absolutely, Harvey. Absolutely. I thought that was one of my favorite stories of how that was a miracle story kind of thing, you know?
Oh, very much so. So, Mickey, when you look back at your career, has there been one defining moment or one particular experience that was particularly memorable and meaningful to you?
Well, you know, you had mentioned it prior, and that is, we do what we do, but it's hard to judge your ability and your performance yourself. So I think, you know, when Joan Rivers stopped the interview and said, Mickey, you're a fantastic interviewer, that meant a lot. And I love, you know, it just made me feel like I belonged and that, you know, I should continue doing what I'm doing. And I'm always trying to get better, by the way, you know. When I do an episode, I watch that episode, and you know, should have I followed up that question with this question? Could have I made this interview a little bit better? What did I forget to ask that I should have? So, you know, I can't tell you how many musicians I've had, like Kenny G, right? And he said, you know, I'm trying to get better every day. I get up in the morning. I practice every day to get better. So I kind of take that attitude as an interviewer. I'm trying to improve all the time, you know, and I hope that answered that question.
Yeah, beautifully. And I can't imagine you being any better than you are, but I love the fact that you always want to keep learning. Do you ever think about retirement?
No. You know, a lot of people ask that question, you know, because I'm not getting any younger. But I still have the vitality. I'm still in good health. I still have the drive to want to do it. So where I'm at right now is as long as the, and I have a great team. You met my team, you know, some of them. Some of them weren't there that day, but I have a great loyal team, editors who weren't there, who've been with me 20 years. But as long as the network allows me to do it, I would like to do it. And I'm not a fan of age discrimination. You know, I think we bring a lot to the table, more so than a 20-something interviewer with no life experience.
I think that's very true, particularly when you're interviewing a legend.
Yes.
And you have the familiarity with their career and their body of work, and you have the gravitas and the maturity to right. be able to sit down with people who are veterans in this business and ask intelligent questions. So I'm glad you're not going to retire, but I do hope that at some point you will conduct a seminar for podcasters and talk show hosts on how to conduct a good interview, because there's so many bad ones out there.
Yes.
Especially ever since Zoom was invented, there are literally thousands of people out there launching podcasts with no idea of how to conduct a proper interview.
But think of it this way, Harvey, those bad ones make you look really good.
Well, I'll tell you,
you are good, but they make you look even better.
I really appreciate that. I have to tell you, it was such a delight to meet you and to be on your show. And it's been an absolute delight having you on our show. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me, Mickey.
Harvey, it was my pleasure, a thrill anytime. And I just want to say continued success with your show, with your series. You do a great job. Continue with it.
Thank you so much, Mickey. That means the world to me, and all the best to you too. Our guest has been New York's most popular and beloved talk show host, Mickey Burns. If you live in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, or Connecticut, don't miss his show, Profiles, on the NYC Media Network. You can also follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter. And don't forget to subscribe to his YouTube channel, which you can see now on your screen. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my director of programming, Deborah Batsafin, my production assistants, Rosa Puzo and Robert Monaghan, my PR directors, Eileen Shapiro and Jimmy Starr, and my entire team at the XBTV1 network in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.